Hey, welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative professionals and entrepreneurs looking to grow by learning new things, getting inspired, and breaking down the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to episode 115, Interview with Andy Malinsky. Andy is a professor at Brandeis University's International Business School, a public speaker and author of Global Dexterity and Reach. In this episode of Getting Work to Work, we talk about his research in comfort zones, how creative professionals can put his research into practice, and the importance of making an effort to consistently go beyond your comfort zone. Show notes and links for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/115. Getting Work to Work is brought to you by Chris Martin Studios, a video production company telling stories with heart, edge, and fearlessness for those who dare to build a better world. Keep in touch with Chris Martin Studios by signing up for the Curiosity Lab, my weekly email newsletter at gwtw.co/115. By doing so, you'll receive my two latest guides, DIY Documentary and Build Your Platform, as well as weekly inspiration and ways to increase your creativity, curiosity, and wonder. All right, you ready for this interview with Andy? Let's get into it. Andy, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. Why don't you start by introducing yourself and share a little bit about what you do?
Sure. My name's Andy Malinsky. I kind of have two hats. I'm a professor at Brandeis University's International Business School and also in the psychology department. So I have an academic side to me, of course. That's my, full-time job. Mm-hmm. But also on the side, I write business books, popular business books. I do consulting and teaching and training, mostly around the topic of helping people step outside their personal and cultural comfort zones. That's basically what my two books are about. And so I do that as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I have to say, your book Reach has really entered my life at a really good time, because it's like, as I read it, I'm like, it's like it's written for me.
Oh, that's good to hear.
So let's start there. Let's start with Reach, which is a look at the personal and professional comfort zones. And I think it's a very important topic for not only, every person, but especially for creative professionals. So what led you to research comfort zones?
I think there are a bunch of different factors. So, by the way, this is kind of retrospectively making sense of it. I don't think very deliberately considering all these factors and having it say, oh, yes, I should now write a book. It's more, in retrospect, I think that there were a couple of things. The first was that my first book came out in 2013, is called Global Dexterity, and it's about acting outside your cultural comfort zone. So I spent a lot of time abroad, and I've also spent a lot of time helping people acclimate to the U.S., to the American business culture. And a lot of that has to do with this topic of stepping outside your comfort zone. It's not just enough to learn the rules of what the differences are, but to be able to, do things that really feel like they're against the grain of your, in this case, your cultural upbringing. I got a lot of feedback from that book, positive feedback, but a lot of interesting feedback from people who said that this book was helping them even though they didn't have anything to do with culture at all, really. Like, for example, I heard from an engineer who had started a business and had to then start selling stuff. And it was so uncomfortable for him to sell. And he was actually looking at my Global Dexterity book, trying to get some answers. And I got a few emails like that. And it kind of had, I think it kind of synced up with the fact that for a while I had been doing academic research on essentially this topic, but didn't even really think about it this way. Like, I had been studying managers performing layoffs, delivering bad news. I'd been studying police officers evicting people from their homes, the experience of these people and the challenges they face, doctors performing painful procedures on kids, that were necessary, and so on. And so that then popped up to me. And then the final thread, I think, was the fact that I just started to realize that I am always outside. My whole life I think stepped outside my comfort zone, been very conscious of it, struggled doing it at every phase from college, post-college, professional and beyond, even personal. And it's just been a constant factor in my life, but kind of to grow and learn and develop, I've always wanted to push myself outside my comfort zone to a degree. And so it's always been something that interested me and that I struggled with. And so all of that together said, you know what, got to go for it.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome, too, because I think it speaks to an awareness of what's going on around you and within you.
I imagine that a lot of creative people, and I would consider myself a creative person. I mean, I love writing. Frankly, the things that I love to do most are creating, whatever it is. Like, for instance, I'm right now in the middle of creating a new online course, which is very much outside my comfort zone. And so whatever it happens to be, I love creating things. And I often find that people, at least in academics, that people oftentimes end up creating things that speak to their own sort of personal challenges or struggles. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think that kind of fuels people in some way.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, it's that challenge of trying something new or going beyond what you may know inherently deep within.
My advisor in graduate school, he was, I guess you'd say, maybe socially awkward, introverted, had a very hard time being in groups and working in groups. He ended up becoming one of the like nation's experts on group dynamics.
Oh, wow.
And I think what drove him was the fact that he felt so uncomfortable and sort of outside his own skin, not comfortable in his own skin in groups. And it drove him to do that. And I think that's true of a lot of people who sort of, they study things that resonate with them for whatever reason. And you'd imagine that gives people special insight, but also the motivation to want to know more and to want to figure something out.
Yeah. So one of the things that I'm really fascinated with just about, you know, any creative person, any writer, for example, is the process that you go through when research and writing a book like Reach. So can you give a glimpse into what the process was like for writing this book?
Yeah, sure. So the very beginning is getting a book contract. That's kind of like the first part. And to do that, you need to come up with a really solid idea of what the book's going to be about, what the sort of elements and chapters are going to be about, and then to have a sample chapter. And so the first part is to write that sample chapter, which for me, I kind of feel like I have to have a really good sense of what the whole thing is about to be able to even do that. Mm-hmm. So that required me to do some preliminary interviews with people. And I always find that I get most inspired and engaged in a topic when I immerse myself in it. In by immersion, in this case, would be doing sort of kind of deep interviews with people about their experiences stepping outside their comfort zones. And I always find that the moments where I'm the most lucid, where I have the best ideas, are when I hear other people's stories. Mm-hmm. And then I can reflect on them, especially across a couple of stories, and start to see similarities and differences and patterns. And I see, one thing I'm good at, I guess, is that I can frameworks and structures kind of always pop right out for me. You know, it just happens. Yeah. It's just something I'm able to do. And so I can't like do that just like sitting around. I have to kind of immerse myself in something to be able to see it. And so that's what I did initially. That helped me get some of the structure. And then from there, I just continued. I interviewed, we call it in research, like snowball sampling, like a snowball kind of rolling down a hill. Like you interview someone and then you ask them if they have any suggestions. And I tried very, very purposefully to interview people across different professions. So the book Reach is basically about like, you know, why it's hard to step outside your comfort zone, how we avoid doing it, and then how you can be more successful. That's essentially what it's about. And so I wanted to talk with people in all sorts of professions. I mean, I really went broad. You know, your typical, at least in my world, typical would be like managers, entrepreneurs, executives, employees. But I also talked to doctors. I talked to lawyers, talked to small business owners. I talked to, you know, police officers, as I said before, that was actually from the academic work. Mm-hmm. I also talked to some people who had some more unusual professions, a goat farmer who made it into the book, a circus performer who didn't make it into the book, unfortunately.
Oh,
I know. I had a long conversation with her. Her situation is very interesting, too, that she told me about. A priest, several rabbis, lots of people, students, teachers, you know. And then the situations were broad, everything from speaking in public to delivering bad news to making small talk with someone you don't know to selling something. I mean, all sorts of very concrete situations outside people's comfort zones. And that was really the process for me. It was an iterative process where I would dive in. I would then come out and I would start to compile ideas and insights and frameworks, and then I would go back in and kind of almost test them in a way by hearing people's stories and seeing if it resonated, and then come back out and sort of like tinker with what I was thinking about. It's almost like at every phase, the emerging idea and the emerging framework was like in beta mode. And then I would go and test it in new interviews and then tinker and test and tinker and test and tinker. And at some point when you feel that the interviews aren't giving or the data you're collecting in a way isn't giving you any discernible extra additional insight, I think that's when you start to feel that your ideas are solidifying. And then that's when you start to write. And then that whole process was a process of storytelling too, because as you know from the book, there a lot of it's told in a storytelling style. So
yeah, which is very powerful too. And what comes through as you're describing your process and having read 2/3 of the book is that your interview style and the storytelling style, you're not just reiterating all of the other stories that we read in business books. You know, it's you can tell it's from your research and it comes across differently and in a more authentic way.
I think I love the human element of storytelling. And I don't know if I'm the best storyteller. I think I try to be a good storyteller. Mm-hmm. I care about it because I think it's the very best way to communicate information, to have people understand something, empathize, resonate with it. And so I work hard to try to craft stories that are kind of compelling, but they can't go on too long either, right? Because this style of a business book is you want to sort of blend stories with framework, right? Mm-hmm. So like, for instance, in the book, I talk about like the 5 core challenges of stepping outside your comfort zone. And so I might have a story that exemplifies a certain one of the challenges, but then I might also introduce a little bit of research and maybe even tell a little bit of a story about the research and so on. And so you're kind of weaving together different threads.
So what are the 5 challenges that you talk about in the book?
A good segue. Considering stepping outside your comfort zone, or you're attempting it, either way, really. Authenticity was the first one, which is, you know, the fear. It could be the anticipatory fear or the actual lived, you know, fear in the moment that this is not me. You know, I feel like an imposter, like a poser, like I don't feel authentic doing this, which can create quite a bit of anxiety in people. The second one is competence. I'm not good at this. And by the way, other people can see that I'm not good at this. So there's sort of a, you know, public and a private side to that one. Mm-hmm. Likeability. I'm worried that people won't like this version of me, right? You know, if I'm more assertive than I normally would be, or whatever your situation might be. But what if they hate this version of me? What if, you know, remember, you're stepping sort of outside. And so, by the way, right there, authenticity, competence, and likability, that's tough, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you just stop there. And by the way, not everyone experiences all of these in a particular situation, but even one of them. The fourth one's resentment. And I found some very interesting cases of that. People feeling sort of like, yeah, they get why they need to do it, but they feel frustrated they have to do it in the first place. A good example of that I spoke to many people who were introverted, mm-hmm. and very frustrated about the fact that in corporate America, your sort of standard run-of-the-mill corporate America, it's really the extroverts that get rewarded, in the sense that, you know, they're the ones who can sort of make chit-chat and schmooze with the boss about last night's ball game or whatever it might be. And then as a result of that, they often, you know, get chosen for plum assignments or given great options, whereas the person who feels more socially uncomfortable in those situations may be introverted, let's say, or just simply doesn't feel comfortable doing that, they might be at a disadvantage. And so, yes, they could understand they need to step outside their comfort zone in that situation, but they might feel inauthentic doing it. They might feel that they don't do it well. That's competence. And they also might feel resentful. Like, why should I have to do this? Like, why can't my work stand on its own? You know, this is a workplace. I'm good at these tasks. Mm-hmm. You know, so that would be resentment. And then morality. You know, I didn't find a ton of examples of this, but I as you know, I start out the book with an example of a young woman who made the decision to fire her best friend from her startup. Mm-hmm. She felt a clear threat to her morality in that setting. So the point here is that any one of these can be challenging, and oftentimes people experience one or two. Mm-hmm. And what essentially it can do is it can make you if door A is I'm going to actually give this a try, and door B is, you know what, I think I'm going to avoid this, you know, it could push you to door B, essentially.
Yeah, and that's really interesting because, you know, as part of your framework, you talk about these challenges and then how they lead to, you know, tactics of avoidance and, yeah, and kind of that vicious cycle of avoidance. So, I mean, you talk about one, maybe two of these challenges leading to avoidance. What does that mean? What are these tactics of avoidance?
This is no surprise probably to a lot of us if we really kind of look deep within inside ourselves, or maybe even not that deep, that we as human beings, we avoid self-threat situations that are self-threatening, right? And there is a very alluring aspect of avoidance, which is quite simply, you get the relief of not having to do something that's hard, right? Yeah. I mean, in any given moment, you know, there's a short-term, long-term trade-off to this. In the short term, you've got that relief. The problem is that if you keep avoiding whatever it is, it's not going to get any easier and very, very likely will be harder. And so the tactics people use, you know, we've got the run-of-the-mill tactics, like, you know, simply avoiding, like saying no to something and maybe even rationalizing it. So I basically started my career 20 years ago, and I remember I was terrified of public speaking, especially in front of corporate audiences, for two reasons. Number one, I wasn't so comfortable speaking in general in public, and that's changed in a big way over 20 years, but certainly back then. And then the second thing is I didn't know what to say. I felt like a total imposter. Like, what would I possibly have to say that would interest them? But I was asked because I was a professor. I was at the University of Southern California at the time, USC in LA. And I was asked, not because I think I was so great, but more because of my role at the school. Like, I was a management professor at the school and so on. And I remember just like, I would lie and say, no, I'm really sorry, I can't make that day. When, of course, you know, my calendar was completely empty. I could easily have made that day. You know, of course, also crossing my fingers, they wouldn't say, oh, no, we're flexible, you can do it any day. But I might combine that. So that would be saying no, but also combine it with a rationalization that, you know, telling myself, you know what, public speaking really isn't that important to my career, or it's not that important that I engage with companies. You know, I can just sort of like stay here in my research, and that's where I need to be. Which, by the way, there's a grain of truth to that. It's important earlier in your career to be involved in research. But if you were in my shoes, which was a business school professor, it's actually quite important, I think, to engage in the business world and to have a foot in both the business world and the academic world. And so, you know, that would be a rationalization. I'll tell you one other technique, one very common one, which I see time and time again. I call it kind of substitutions, but imperfect substitutions. So, and maybe some of the listeners out there, maybe you guys can resonate with this or connect with this idea. So I spoke with a travel agent as part of my research. And in these days of Expedia and TripAdvisor and all these massive online sites, to be a travel agent these days, you have to really cultivate a sort of trusting local relationship with people, right? It's a real sort of white glove, hands-on, personable business relationship. The problem was is that this particular person who I interviewed, he was quite uncomfortable going to networking events and even selling his business and chit-chatting with people he didn't know. But of course, that's a great way to, I mean, not giving the hard sell, but that's a great way to meet people and to potentially interest them in your business. So what he would do is he would say, you know what, this networking event or this public opportunity, it's not that important. I think I'm just going to send out an email blast, or I'm just going to post. I'm going to post on Facebook.
Yeah,
which, by the way, is not bad in any sort of, you know, inherent way, but it's not a real substitute for the thing he was truly afraid of.
That's fascinating. I was fascinated too when you wrote about procrastination, because that one really resonated with me, and it really got me thinking about how I use procrastination to avoid things and how it almost blocks me from doing anything else. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, I think a lot of creative people in the business world and probably outside the business world feel this. And I think a lot of the procrastination stems from a fear of evaluation, right? And critique, and well, I guess you can dig even deeper inside about why that's such a threat. But, you know, we're so afraid to put something out there, whether it's an early draft, an early prototype, an early version, knowing full well that the way that you're going to improve that version is to get real notes, real feedback, real critique from the real people you're ultimately ultimately trying to produce this for, whether it's clients or admirers or readers or whatever it might be, you know. And so people tinker and tinker and tinker and rationalize to themselves, you know what, I just have to finish this, or I just have to work through this some more. When the reality is that that's probably time poorly spent. And the very best thing to do would be to get that feedback, but you're in a way so terrified to hear it that you never go and get it.
Yeah. That's so powerful. One of my favorite sections of the book is when you get practical with what you call behavior flexing tools that we can use to go beyond our comfort zones. So things like conviction, customization, and clarity. How do each of these stand alone and work together to foster our courage to act?
Yeah, so conviction's the first one, and that's really discovering your sense of purpose. Sometimes people lose track of that. What's in this for you? Like, really, like at a deep level, why is this important? Why is this meaningful for you to be doing? And sometimes, you know, we're talking about something outside your comfort zone. Sometimes it's professional. You know, sometimes it's, you've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. You've always wanted to start your own business. You've always wanted to be, I don't know, whatever it would be. I don't know. Make a difference on in some way on some people's lives. And anyone probably could fill in their version of a professional impact that's really meaningful to them. Sometimes it's also personal. And of course, you know, professional and personal can blend. But personal, an example for me of personal is I have two children, 11 and 13, and I'm always trying to, in an age-appropriate way, kind of coax them outside their comfort zone. And, you know, gosh, I wrote a book about this. I should be able to do this. And like, you know, like I, and like, but then when I see myself chickening out or something, I say to myself, you know, gosh, you know, what kind of dad and role model do I want to be? You know, and that's always a very powerful source of, you know, conviction for me. But, you know, so wherever it comes from, whether it's personal, professional, a blend, a combination, you know, find it, locate it, embrace it. That's the wind at your back when sort of like every bone in your body is telling you no. Mm-hmm. So conviction's quite important. Yeah. And I found people who were able to sort of discover and find and embrace their source of conviction were more likely to take that leap and try something out. The second one's customization. And I have to say, I kind of love this one.
Yeah, me too.
It really just, I kept hearing it time and time again in interviews. And of course, no one was saying, I customize. Like, they weren't describing that. But it's basically the idea that there's no one-size-fits-all version of anything. You can tweak something. You can personalize it, you know, to make it your own. You often have more leeway to do it than you think. And what I think is powerful about this, and I'll give you a couple of examples, but what's powerful about this is that I think people are often feel quite helpless in situations outside their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. But when you can realize that you can customize, that puts a little bit of power back in your hands.
Yeah.
So examples of customization, it could be body language, it could be actual language, it could be the timing of when you do something, it could be staging the setting or the context, it could be a prop, like an actual prop. So I'll give you an example of a prop, for example. This is not in the book. This is from an email that someone sent me who read Reach and said, you know, it's a really cool book. I loved it. I'm very awkward and socially uncomfortable at get-togethers, and I wanted to try to apply your book to help me have a sort of a more fulfilling time at just, I don't know, social get-togethers, essentially. You know, not professional, really, but more social. And so she said she'd kind of be the wallflower and sit in the corner and not really say too much. And she had this epiphany that from reading this section of customization, and particularly the part on props, that what if she brought a selfie stick to these get-togethers? Now, she actually likes photography, and she had a selfie stick. She didn't, like, go and get one. She had one. And so she brought it with her, and it was quite a transformation. She said people would look at it. They'd say, what's that? She'd say, oh, it's a selfie stick. And they'd say, oh, yeah, because almost everyone's heard, not everyone, but many, many people have heard of a selfie stick. But fewer people know what it looks like or how it actually works. And she said she'd show people and say, oh, let me see your cell phone. And she'd put it on there, and they say, oh, is that how it works? Oh, let's try it out. And by the way, already you can tell from just what I said how different that experience is from what it was before. And so that's a good example of customization, one little example of it. But there's so many ways you can do it, and that's, I find it quite powerful.
Yeah. One of the ways that I'm where I didn't have a word for it until I read your book, but like one of the things that I have started to do is customization was I knew I needed to make cold calls to businesses for introductions and things like that. And it always, I never really knew what to say. And so I just started with, you know, curiosity, being open to asking them questions about their business and being like, oh, I'm really intrigued by this portion of your business. You know, why did you decide to do that? And so I approached it more as being curious about them as opposed to, hey, let me tell you about myself.
Yeah, no, that's a great, so that would be in the category of language, right? And I think that's a great one. And if you think about it, there are just so many ways that you can make a situation your own. Mm-hmm. But if you're not open to that idea, you might sort of default to what you said is like you're some sort of stereotypical image of what it is to kind of sell or make a call like that, and then feeling frozen about how inauthentic that feels. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's just I flash to that vicious cycle of avoidance when I hear that.
Right, exactly. Not the same way. I hate selling. I mean, I have a very hard time selling something. But if I feel like, so a good example is like the online course that I'm creating now. It's called Mastering American Business Culture. So it's for foreign professionals and students wanting to learn how to be more successful in the U.S. in terms of, you know, stepping outside their comfort zone and in professional social situations. And so, you know, if I think of it in terms of like the hard sell, I feel incredibly uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But if I think about it in terms of like conviction, like I know that this can actually help people. And the reason I know it is because it's based on all the stuff I've been doing for like 18 years. And like I've seen the impact of it. And so that's conviction. Customization. Well, let's figure out, is there a way I can sell this not in sort of the hard sell way, but actually sort of maybe telling some stories of people who I know who have benefited from this? You know what I mean? That kind of thing. And then it feels a little bit better to me, you know, than like, you know, buy one, get one free. Or so anyways, the last one is clarity. So you got conviction, customization, and clarity. Clarity is basically the idea that I found people who are most successful in my experience stepping outside their comfort zone were able to not what psychologists would call catastrophizing and sort of looking at the worst case version of a scenario. I think oftentimes our fears, our worries, our anxieties kind of pull us to extremes, especially in these uncomfortable situations outside our comfort zones, like I'll never be able to do that, or I'm going to be a total failure, whatever it is, like these extremes. Or by the way, they might also go to the opposite extreme and say, I won't do this unless I'm the, you know, plug in your superlative best. Like, unless I won't public speak unless I'm the best TED talker ever, or unless I'm a very popular TED talker or something like that. But I think people who are most successful were able to somehow claim that middle ground, sort of that grounded reality of, you know what, you know, I think it's important for me to try something out. I'm going to learn a lot from doing it. It won't be fabulous, and that doesn't even really matter the first time because this is an experiment for me, and I'm going to learn a lot, and then I'm going to try it again, and I'll bet you I'm going to over time find my way of doing it, and so on and so forth, and sort of that, like being being grounded in your own experience and in the realistic probability of what will, you know, what it will be like as opposed to these extremes was quite an important resource, I think, for people stepping outside their comfort zone.
Yeah. So what are the benefits of doing this work that we often don't want to do, but know we need to do it?
Well, it breaks that spiral of avoidance. So what I found is that people who are able to take the leap, they could benefit from self-discovery, because if you try something, you have the potential to discover that, and I kept finding this, that it's not as hard as you think it was going to be, right? Yeah. So many people feel that, and that they're a little bit better at it than they thought they would be. And when you start to try something, especially when you kind of stack the deck a little bit and customize it and, you know, look at your source of conviction and so on, and also maybe try a version of it that's a stretch, but that's not like in your panic zone, like not the most impossible version. So if you're calling a company, for instance, in your example, like don't call like the company you've always dreamed to get, you know, in where they're notoriously difficult to deal with and so on. Try to, you know, stack the deck in your favor, have that experience of taking the leap, and then probably realizing it's you're a little bit better at it, and it's a little bit less daunting than you thought, which then will probably increase the chances you'll try it again, mm-hmm. which then creates what I would call a virtuous positive spiral, right? Which is very different from that negative sort of, you know, spiral of avoidance. And that's the reason that all of this is important, to try to coax you and nudge you, you know, to actually give it a go, yeah. Because there's a lot of power in that.
Yeah, for sure. So when you know you have to go beyond your comfort zone, do you have like a mental or a written checklist that helps you kind of mentally prepare for what you have to do?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I'm not a checklist guy. And it's funny, you know, if I'm being perfectly honest, mm-hmm. what usually happens is I will go to the exact wrong places. I'll start to catastrophize. I'll start to feel my tendency to avoid. I might even start to avoid, and then I'll usually stop myself. And I will say, wait a second. Interesting. You know, and then I'll start to apply these ideas and to kind of pick me back up. That's what I think I usually do.
Okay. So you kind of follow your framework in and of itself, where it's like you've got your challenges, your avoidance, and then you go to your tools.
I do. But I oftentimes, what would be much better is if I had the tools on a little checklist and said, okay, situation, let me apply these right away. My tools end up for me personally often being a life vest, but I get out of the water safe, you know, like it actually helps me and works for me.
So one of the things that I discovered on your website was a Reach interview series where you have an informal dialogue with respected thought leaders. And as I'm looking at names, as I'm kind of listening to some of the interviews, I'm thinking, was this a project that you had to go beyond your comfort zone with?
Those are super fun to do. That's like my version of a podcast, but it's like a video. A video cast. I really like them. No, that's not outside my comfort zone. I, you know, 20 years ago, yes. Now in my career, I'm pretty well established, I feel. I actually like talking. I like doing interviews. And in fact, from doing podcasts, I've started to think maybe I should do one just because I actually, or a video cast. I really like it. I love interviewing. You know, I've done interviews my whole life for research and for the two books I've written. And so I actually really like it. It's not outside my comfort zone at all. The only part about that's hard is sometimes the scheduling, especially trying to get really super famous people on. Like I have no qualms. Like I wrote Bill Gates a note the other day. By the way, he did not respond to me, but I did get Simon Sinek on, and he's quite at least in the thought leadership world, he's a big guru guy. And I've got a bunch of other people there who've got quite big followings in the sort of thought leadership realm. I've got some other cool people coming up that I'm interviewing. So I have no problem asking people, because that particular project, there's a little bit of a twist to it, which is that I'm starting to pivot in a little bit of my work. I haven't published anything yet in this realm, but I'm very interested in helping young people sort of grow into leaders. Mm. I'm a professor at a business school. Our students trend young. It's a school where a lot of our students are 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds. And I'm the head of a leadership institute, and we're remaking it to really focus on what we can do for these young people. And so I've been asking some of the interviewees, and I'm now kind of pivoting those interviews that you mentioned to focus on that as well. And so I feel that that's a real – it gives meaning and conviction for me. Plus, I think it's also something that a lot of people out there, even quote unquote famous people out there, feel like they want to contribute to.
Yeah. That's really interesting too. And I wonder, when you spend your time in the classroom, how does that impact your research and the books that you do and the public speaking? But then how does that research, books, and public speaking impact your classroom? How does both of that work?
I think that's like the gold standard for me of being a professor in 2017. You know, you want to, especially at a professional school. So I'm at a professional school, meaning that my students are professional students. They're, you know, I do teach undergraduates, but I teach undergraduates in the business program mostly. Although I also teach undergraduate psychology students, but most of my students are master's degree students, you know, MBA students and such. And I think it's really important to have a rich impact outside the university that's very much connected to your work inside the university, and learn from the classroom and bring it outside, mm-hmm. learn from outside and bring it into the classroom, and have it be like an absolute sort of cycle. Mm-hmm. And I think that benefits everybody. So that's sort of my philosophy. Mm-hmm. I've always sort of adopted that philosophy, and now I'm sort of embracing it even more as I kind of develop and have more opportunities and responsibilities.
Yeah. How do you balance all that?
I don't know. Sequencing, you know, don't do it all at the same time.
Yeah. That's fascinating. I was interviewing a guy last week, and he was talking about all the different things that he did. And he's like, well, I don't do them all at once. You know,
exactly.
Like, one thing is, you know, primary, and then I've got two secondary and a tertiary. And then that fourth spot changes all the time.
Oh, exactly. It's sequencing and balancing. And it's also like, I don't know, it's like, this is going to sound really trite, but it's like, you know, waking up every day and doing something, mm-hmm. you know, like, and getting something done, or more than something done. And if you do that over time, you can accomplish quite a lot.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Well, Andy, I have one last question for you. What are you excited about today?
Literally today. Well, I'm a huge sports fan, and the Patriots crushed the Denver Broncos last night in football. So I'm like super excited about that.
That's awesome.
I'm doing a lot of interesting projects, and I've talked to you about, you know, many of them. And whenever I open my computer to the next thing that I'm working on, I'm always excited to kind of dive in. And I've tried to craft my work life over time to make it be that way. Mm. And so, you know, I don't think there's any day that I'm all that much more excited than another day, but yeah. I think that my stuff is, I find my stuff, you know, exciting and impactful and meaningful. And so that's probably a lame answer. I'm sorry. Let's go back to the Patriots.
Yeah. I thought that was a really awesome answer because, you know, sometimes we can just approach work from here I am again, you know, Eeyore almost, you know, approach to work. Yeah. And just, it's nice and refreshing to hear someone who's just excited about the work they're doing and have crafted their work to be that way. So that is an awesome answer.
Oh, good. Okay.
Well, Andy, thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed learning more about Reach and the work behind it. And thank you just for everything that you do, both academically and professionally speaking.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's a fun conversation. It's always fun to reflect, you know, to sit down. This helps me too. You sort of reflect on what you're doing and why and so on. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, my pleasure. That does it for this episode of Getting Work to Work. Thank you so much to Andy for taking time out of his day and sharing about his book and his research. And thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with your friends, other creative professionals, and entrepreneurs? You can send them to gwtw.co or have them search for Getting Work to Work on most podcast platforms. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work, or know someone who should be on the show? Maybe you need some advice or just want someone to say hi to. Drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm chris@chrismartinstudios.com. As this episode comes to an end, I want to do something cool for you. I want to give one of you a free copy of Andy's book, Reach. How do you win? Sign up for the Curiosity Lab at gwtw.co/115, and then send me an email with your physical address so that I can get the book to you. I can't wait to share Andy's book with you. It's really impacted me in a lot of different ways, and I hope it does the same for you. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.